Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Let me introduce to you
Locked and Loaded with Rick Mudd on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Okay, we are marching merrily into our number two of Locked and Loaded today here live on TNT Radio. It's Monday, the 6th of March, 2023. Coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes time, I'll be talking to Stephen Kelly, who was my very first guest ever on Locked and Loaded on TNT Radio. So I'll never forget him for that. And he's been coming back for more and more punishment ever since then. He's a thoroughly decent individual. He's an ex-New South Wales police officer who is currently working alongside Tony Nicolick in a solicitor's practice in Sydney. And they are advocating a lot for people that have been unfairly dismissed from their jobs and people that have been injured by vaccines. So I'm going to be talking to Stephen shortly. Just before Darren joins me again, some more news items that are catching my eye. After the Ohio eco hell that's been unleashed by someone deciding to take a match and set fire to all the toxic chemicals there, just in case they went on fire, they decided to set them on fire anyway. That sounds like a good strategy. Last week, this is in danger of disappearing out of the public eye, and I hope it doesn't, because there's a lot of people who have been left high and dry there, and I think they will be manipulated heavily. They're already talking about moving them or constructing a 15-minute city-type place for all the displaced residents of East Palestine in Ohio, giving them digital IDs. They know they've got them over a barrel. Their ground's contaminated. Their water's contaminated. They've maybe got nowhere else that they can go. A lot of people are very vulnerable at the minute to, how would you say, government assistance. And as old Ronnie Reagan once said, the most frightening thing someone could ever say to you, nine words, is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. Old Ronnie once said that before he went completely cuckoo back in the day. But one of the publicity stunts that was carried out last week is they had a few heads who had visited, not Trump, by the way, he was in his MAGA hat, giving out Trump water. Yes, Trump water and free McDonald's to all the residents of no salads, by the way. No salads, no grilled chicken, Big Macs for all. He was down doing a little bit of publicity work, obviously. I don't think he really cares about the residents of Cleveland or Ohio or East Palestine. But anyway, he was there. We had a few federal type people drinking water from glasses saying it's perfectly safe to drink the water. I'm looking at a video right now of someone who's lifted some of this out of a tap. EPA administrator backtracks now and says that he wouldn't allow his kids near the streams in East Palestine after claiming a month ago that it was safe. These people have no conscience. How many families drank the water based on their feedback? Stop trusting government agencies. And this is the thing. This is the sad thing. That, as Darren and I said, even if they stop the mandates today, even if they pull every vaccine off the market today, they destroy them all today. Brilliant. Hallelujah. How wonderful would that be? But there's billions of people that the damage has been done. And you can't undo it, as far as I know. Maybe you can, maybe you can't, but pretty much once that poison's in your body, once it starts messing around with what's inside of you, it's hard to go back from that. And it's the same if you've been swigging on contaminated water in East Palestine for the last month. Once it's inside, who knows what it contains, and it certainly, I would say, is not good for your body. So that's in East Palestine. And lastly here, let's look at Ireland. I've been neglecting Ireland this morning. I shouldn't really neglect Ireland. But in Ireland, we're spending an average of €4,000 a year to power and heat our homes. And yet, the price the suppliers pay has fallen by 58% since last summer. So as one of the headlines reads here this morning for Ireland, the energy crisis is over, they say. So why are our bills still so high? Well, you know, we keep paying them, don't we? If somebody's overcharging you for a product, then you keep buying it, well, they're going to keep the price up. Okay. So read into that what you like. And this brings back memories of last year, some shady clandestine organization. You remember them? Darren's nodding. It's weird because I'm getting a lot of flashbacks as we talk about a lot of stuff that we talked about last year. Don't pay movement, you know, 150,000 people don't pay. Yeah, there was a lot in that, and they were very interesting characters that were behind that campaign. But just saying, there's one old Irish guy in particular, he's making a stand, an old pensioner. He's been slapped with a bill for about, $2,000 for 2 months worth of electricity. He's just saying, I can't pay that. I'm not going to pay it. Do what you want. I'm not paying it. Maybe that old fart will be the one, the camel or the straw that breaks the old camel's back with these electricity providers. But anyway, we're all being stiffed for electricity or gas or oil or petrol or diesel, you name it. We're getting stiff for it, but the prices are going down. So anyway, that's just for your information here. We'll be right back after this very, very brief sweeper here on TNT Radio.
Keeping the commitment.
I love you guys.
Unbelievable.
24/7.
Listen to you every day, have for years.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, a subject that's very close to our hearts right now. Very close to our hearts. Good old Rishi Sunak, the unelected banker, vows to end asylum claims from small boat arrivals. Darren, what's he talking about now? More talk, no doubt, and still no action.
Yeah, 100 days, he says he will sort out immigration. It's been about 130 days since he's been the unelected prime minister. And he has said anyone arriving in the UK on a small boat will be prevented from claiming asylum under new legislation expected to be unveiled tomorrow, Tuesday. Rishi Sunak, who has made stopping the boats one of his top priorities, told the Mail on Sunday, make no mistake, if you come here illegally, you will be not able to stay. Fighting talk, that is. A new rights break could stop lawyers using the right to family life to stop deportations. So that's a rule that the left and their activist lawyers and solicitors have used to prevent people being deported because it breaks up their families. Refugee groups have said it is unworkable. The new legislation expected to make asylum claims inadmissible from those who travel to the UK on small boats. It would place a duty on the Home Secretary to remove anyone arriving on a small boat to Rwanda or a safe third country as soon as reasonably practical and ban them from returning permanently. Currently, asylum seekers coming to the UK have the right to seek protection under the UN's Refugee Convention and the European Convention of Human Rights, which we could leave at any time we want. But the Mail on Sunday says a clause in the illegal migration bill is expected to apply a rights break to effectively allow the conventions to be circumvented. However, it's not clear how the government is proposing to limit the rights of asylum seekers, nor is the pledge to deport asylum seekers straightforward. And that's after we had this Rwanda deal. Remember the Rwanda deal? Bit like don't pay. Yeah, bit like all these other little storylines that we get drip fed. You know, here, chew on that, TNT. Chew on that, BBC. Chew on that. That no one's really been, I don't think anyone has been returned to Rwanda because the country is deemed as unsafe, yet they're coming from France, which is very safe, apparently, especially on the streets of Paris, Rick.
Yeah, this whole business again, here we find ourselves again. It's like Groundhog Day with the small boats, all right? And you can go back a long way on this one, but, you know, when old Priti Patel was still in office back in 2019, she said, okay, I'm going to tackle this by 2020. We're going to see a massive reduction in the amount of small boat crossings. And by 2021, there's going to be none, zero, zip, nada. Obviously, they've done nothing but increase. You know, Rishi Sunak, we're going to do something about it. Suella Braverman talks a fantastic game when it comes to dealing with this problem. But again, nothing's been done. Rishi, when he unelectedly moved his scrawny little ass in the number 10, let's just remember his 5 points, his dumbed down manifesto for the people. Small boats will be dealt with. He didn't say illegal immigration or the invasion of Britain. He said it's a small boat problem will be dealt with. And listen, they're still piling in. As you rightly pointed out, there was a little bit of a lull at the start of the year simply because of the weather. They've got nothing to do with anything else, the weather. And in terms of, this is a people trafficking organization, people trafficking racket that's going on illegally. And then when they get here, then they have a formal agreement, the government, with Serco, to put these people up in accommodation, whether they be hotels or guest houses or holiday camps, refurbished holiday camps, sports centers, student accommodation, office blocks, you name it. It's a racket, Darren. You and me need to start looking, get off air together, have a little Zoom call and say, how can we get into the people trafficking? If we don't want to do it illegally down the people trafficking, let's forget the dinghies. Let's get ourselves a government contract somewhere, stiff the local community, to hell with them and line our pockets. That's effectively what Serco are doing. And Rishi seems to be happy with that arrangement, doesn't he? I'm sure he's got a little envelope coming to him every now and then, allegedly, maybe, who knows? I'm only speculating.
What, billionaire Rishi Sunak is not taking money and having it stuffed into his pocket? I'm sure he is, and they all are. And there's probably some bigwig saying, nah, mate, do the talking bit, but not the walking bit, because we're making millions, billions off the taxpayer. And they have done for a long time, companies like Serco, and there are probably others, you know, big housing associations and hotel chains are probably all getting in on the old gravy immigration gravy chain. And a statistic I saw a couple of weeks ago was actually, what is the percentage increase in illegal immigration into the UK? Because the Conservatives, since they've been back in power since in 2010, have been promising to curb illegal immigration for nearly 13 years. And actually, since 2010, illegal immigration into the UK has increased a staggering over 14,000% increase in the number of illegal immigrants coming into the UK. And my question's always been, what's happening to all the boats? Where are you putting all these boats? There must be absolutely loads of warehouses dotted all around the southeast full of inflatable dinghies.
What do they do with the boats? That's a damn good question. I've never thought
about
that.
What do they do with all the boats?
What do they do with the boats?
They auction them off. Apparently, I think they auction them off. So either everybody in the southeast and further, it's moving up, owns an inflatable dinghy that they've got on the cheap from the UK government from the Home Office, or the people traffickers are coming in and getting those boats back. That, to me, what I understand from my amateur journalism, is actually what's happening. It is a scam. There's no way someone in France, on the coast of France, is producing 10, 15 inflatable dinghies every single day for the last 3 years. It's just not, it's not something that I see as feasible. So what's happening with the boats? And are we really going to see legal immigrants stop coming into the UK? Is Rishi and his ilk going to stop taking a bit of backhander from old Serco and the like? Find it highly unlikely, not when the immigration has increased by 14,000% in 13 years.
They talk about the rights break. It seems to be this is the new rhetoric from the Tories, the break. We had the Northern Ireland sea border discussion last week where they said they had the Stormont break on it. You know, there could be a break there just in case something was to proceed. Now we have the new rights break that could stop lawyers using the right to family life to stop deportations. With anything that they're putting forward, there's always little small prints here, small prints there, and get out of jail free cards built in that effectively they can override their own policies and advice if push comes to shove. Such a slippery bunch, Darren, but no doubt we'll hear more from Suella, we'll hear more from Rishi, and we'll get more people crossing the damn channel. You know, you mentioned you put forward a solution last year, I remember famously on air, involving torpedoes, but of course it was done for
tongue-in-cheek.
They work, they do.
But that's my point, was that works. A physical deterrence from entering our country works, like walls, like Royal Navy, like torpedoes, yeah? You see how quickly they stop coming in then. Just saying.
And of course, tongue-in-cheek, you know. We like a little bit of humor here on TNT Radio in case anybody thinks we're talking about torpedoing those people crossing the channel. chat all. Anyway, Darren, thank you so much, my friend, for your contributions this morning. Much, much appreciated. Darren will be joining me again tomorrow morning as normal. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, the other legend that is Stephen Kelly will be joining me from an undisclosed vehicle somewhere in Australia. He's parked up at the side of the road. He looks very perturbed, but I'm going to try and make it all okay when he comes live on air with me in about 2 minutes' time. Don't go away.
TNT Radio's Joe Hoft.
This new drop of Twitter files, I think it's the 17th drop. More connections between the government and Twitter, and how the government was managing Twitter, telling them what to put up and what to take down.
Another three-letter agency called the GEC, which is the U.S. State Department's Global Engagement Center. The U.S. State Department, both directly and using third-party organizations, were pressuring Twitter to censor American users based on this lie that the people they were targeting were had connections or were actually Russian, Chinese, and or Hindu. So we saw a recent example of this not that long ago about the Russian bots. This is kind of similar, except it spreads much further than just Russian bots. I guess everybody's a bot and they come from everywhere except where they really live, which happens to be America. Created in the final year of the Obama administration, this GEC is a State Department entity that works with multiple U.S. intelligence agencies to, quote unquote, counter foreign disinformation. It is forbidden from operating within the United States, which is interesting, and recently had to cut its ties with a George Soros-backed NGO that was using its funding to target American conservative news sites.
Joe Hoft on TNT Radio.
I view Al Sharpton as a poverty pimp.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland.
I walk outside every day in fear of white supremacy right here in the middle of the hood. Okay, yeah, right.
My grandparents had a cross burned on their property. We were slaves in the past. We're free now.
I never seen a white supremacist in my life. Never, and they can't point to one. Where the hell are they? I wish somebody would introduce me to a white supremacist. I would like to talk to them and take pictures with them because I never seen one in my life.
Biden says that the country is systematically racist. You know, I almost want to look at him and say, haven't you been the system for the last 50 years?
He's the one that sponsored the 1994 crime bill, which unequivocally basically targeted black men in black neighborhoods.
The polarization. The left versus right, the black versus white.
Pro-choice against pro-life.
I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you.
People have had to make it like they're apologizing for their whiteness.
And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege?
What's more disheartening to me is that those who are within the black community are allowing for that to take place.
So really what we're dealing with is a cultural Marxism that Joe Biden and all the rest from the left were trying to inculcate into our society.
Well, you were once the oppressor, so now I must be the oppressor. You don't avenge evil for evil.
It's okay to say disparaging things against white people. Our former president, Barack Obama, said it, you know, about old white men are a problem. Except when it comes time for him to fly around on their airplanes and ride around on their yachts or be their next door neighbors or endorse them for president like Joe Biden, then old white men are okay. This is their last gasp.
What do progressive socialists really want?
Watch Systematic Deception at salemnow.com.
Global warming, northern hemisphere snow cover at 56-year high, and one of the coolest springs in the southern hemisphere were ignored by the climate fascists at COP27. Europe and the UK faces a really cold winter. There is no climate emergency. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Okay, always, always, always super happy to be joined by the next gentleman on the line, none other than Mr. Stephen Kelly. Stephen was a member of the New South Wales Police for pushing up to 30 years. He quit his job because he didn't want to get jabbed up. That was one of the very first things we ever talked about here, or that I ever talked about on TNT Radio with this gentleman, the situation that he was facing because of vaccine mandates. Stephen, number one, welcome back to Locked and Loaded. And number two, it would appear that there's been a little bit of U-turning going on with old Perrottet in New South Wales. And now Scott Morrison's weighed in, I noticed this morning, talking about premiers urging them to drop vaccine mandates as he reveals the National Cabinet's expert advisory panel never agreed to wide-scale mandates. Do you feel like you're living in the Twilight Zone right now?
G'day. Good evening, Rick. Yeah, it's a bit crazy, isn't it, at the moment in Australia, trying to work out the inconsistent opinions that are being given by the politicians. But certainly, it's an interesting week with the Premier coming out and saying what he did say last week.
Mm-hmm. What did you make of that? I mean, that, like I said, that was the very first thing I ever talked to anybody about, was you last year having to quit your job because you didn't want to take a mandate to remain in your profession, which was the police. You obviously left that. You've had a lot of upheaval since then. You've changed career somehow since then. You're now working with AFL solicitors in Sydney, which is great, with Tony Nicolick and co. But listening to this yourself this week, how does that make you feel in terms of all that time and effort that you'd put into your job, and now they're almost backtracking, you know, a year, 2 years later to say, well, you know what, Stephen, maybe we shouldn't have mandated that after all. Maybe you should never have had to quit your job in the first place. What are your thoughts on it, literally, as somebody who's in that actual position right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, Rick. You know, I mean, what Perrottet has come out and effectively said is that it's quite significant, because it makes you say, well, if these vaccines never stopped transmission, then what did they do? And why were people injecting them or being coerced and mandated to take something that was not effective in doing what it was alleged to have done? And I've also seen somewhere tonight, I was sent a document in which was signed by Morrison last year or 2 years ago, indicating that the reason for promoting the vaccines was because that it was effective in stopping transmission. So, you know, it now opens the legitimate questions as to really, I mean, should this be the beginning or commencement of criminal investigations? Because, you know, if people were deliberately lied to about the what the vaccine could do, and the Premier's now admitted that it doesn't stop transmission, then certainly there's a lot of people that have got a lot of questions to answer for, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I mean, from your perspective as well, there was a news article I saw this morning as well about New York, and they were hell for mandates with the fire department, the police department, paramedics, teachers, classroom assistants, anyone really facing the public. They were mandating that if they didn't get injected, they would lose their jobs. So a lot of people were sacked because they didn't comply. They didn't go along with that. Now New York seems to be backtracking somehow to say, well, maybe we shouldn't have done that. We will reinstate people back again, potentially with backdated pay, going back as far as they've been out of their jobs, plus interest added on top. And I've asked you this question before, actually, many months ago. Hypothetically speaking, I says, well, for you personally, if you were to be offered, say, okay, Stephen, if New South Wales cops came back to you again and said, we'll give you back your job, we'll backdate all your pay, we'll take you back in again, have they effectively, you know, have they rubbed salt in the wounds? And I'm just asking this because you're in that position yourself. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to. But, you know, is it something you've thought about? Well, what if they come back to me? What if they reverse what they've done to me? Can they compensate you for it? Look at all the hassle and aggravation that it's caused you over the last 2 years. Plus, you were demonized. You were in a very small minority of people in your position that actually walked away rather than take the jab. Is it something you would either want to, or would considering going back to, or are you like, stuff you, I'm on a different path right now, and take your job and stick it where the sun don't shine, you know, that type of thing?
Rick, I think, to be honest with you, I couldn't see myself ever electing to go back to the police, even if that offer was there. But I certainly believe that there should be some sort of compensation for those that were forced out in the circumstances that they were. I mean, I at the time that I left too, I missed out on a voluntary redundancy too, because they brought that in 2 months after I resigned, you know, and I would have, if I could have, obviously had gone out with some sort of financial payment, but I went out with nothing. So, I mean, from that point of view, certainly I do believe that those that were forced to or were sacked or forced to resign should be entitled to some form of compensation for, you know, what they've gone through. But I wouldn't go back to the police now. I think it's, you know, there's just too much damage, too much water under the bridge for me.
Yeah, that's what I thought, actually. But that's an interesting halfway house scenario that you're talking about there, about actual compensation being paid, whether or not you actually go back to the job or not, because of the loss of earnings that you've had, because of the stress, the displacement that you've had. And, you know, that's what I mean about salt in the wounds, the fact that you missed out on a voluntary redundancy package. You know, had you been able to hang on in there for another 2 months' time, that has resulted in a financial hit on you too, for effectively no reason at all. The should never have been pushing those mandates in the first place. We'll look at that possibility of reparations or compensation maybe when we come back. We just got to take a real brief news break here for a minute. And when we come back, let's look at this sort of middle ground almost. You don't want to go back there. You're happy where you are. However, you need to be, not just you, by the way, everybody that's in your position maybe needs to be compensated by the government for effectively doing them out of an occupation, doing them out of income, and doing them out of a career. So we'll do that when we come back after the news here on TNT Radio. Don't go away.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Newsflash!
Now, without further ado...
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Former US President Donald Trump has pledged to end the war in Ukraine within 24 hours if he is successful in reclaiming the White House in 2024. China's doubled down on reunification with Taiwan, saying it will take resolute steps to oppose the self-governed island's push for independence. And North Korea has appealed to the United Nations to step in and stop the US and South Korea from holding any further military drills on the Korean Peninsula.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, Stephen, this business of compensation, obviously we've heard it in respect to people that have been vaccine injured, of which there are very, very many people out there that have been injured, had their lives destroyed by the fact that they did take this experimental mRNA gene therapy shot that's still in clinical trials even to this very day, or at least it's coming up to the end of its 2-year clinical trial. The people that took the injection, they were the clinical trial. The experimental clinical trial, you could have took it to keep your job. You could have got sick. You could have died. You could have been permanently disabled. You could have been really messed up bodily as a result of that. And if that was the case, there is a compensation scheme available by the Australian government, but you really have to jump through hoops to get any kind of a payment. And I think there's a clause built in, correct me if I'm wrong, that if you don't spend a night in hospital, if you haven't spent the night in hospital, it greatly reduces any claim that you're eligible for, which could explain one of the reasons why the hospitals were very keen to kick people out straight away after they presented with potential vaccine injuries, because if they spent the night there, it could lead them open for massive claims going forward. It's not enough to compensate people for losing their health. This business of work compensation is an interesting one, because obviously they're talking about New York reinstating you with full back pay. That's assuming you're back the job again. But in your case, if you don't want to go back to the job again, I agree. I mean, like somebody in your position with the service that you had and the reason why you had to leave, surely they should be bandying about compensation. Has that been talked about at all, or is that just something that you would like to see, or is there any rumblings in the grapevine that they're going to look at stuff like that? Is that something that you guys would be able to do at AFL to pursue stuff like that through the courts?
I think eventually, Rick, that there'll be a case or a decision that will come out that will result in, you know, finding that these mandates were unlawful and, you know, the decision to force people to have them was unreasonable too. And ultimately, I believe that that will open the door for compensation for people that have lost their jobs, and I hope that it would have a domino effect on other industries. The problem at the moment is there's just so much inconsistency too, even in Australia and New South Wales, where you've got some government departments that, for example, the education department have allowed teachers to go back to work, but then you have other institutions like the New South Wales Police and the Fire Brigade that are still refusing to allow police to go back to work unless they've had they're double vaccinated. And the irony is with the New South Wales Police that the commissioner hasn't mandated any booster on the police, but she won't let anyone go back to work unless they've had the first two, which seems quite ridiculous given we know, that the immunity given after two shots wears off very quickly. And in fact, the having two shots now would be of no effect at all because of the the different variants and whatnot. So it's just a ludicrous policy that that she's maintaining. But in relation to compensation for police or other people that have lost their jobs, I definitely think that's going to happen. The problem I see, Rick, is that they're going to try and, from what we've seen in some organisations, that there have been some attempts to try and settle matters, but on very unreasonable terms, I would say, with low amounts of compensation. And certainly, these non-disclosure type clauses, that's the problem with those people that that have had some success in trying to sort of, resign from their jobs or going through, the unfair dismissal process through the Fair Work Commissions.
The fact that they're still hanging on to this first two, you don't have to get your booster, but you still have to get your first two. It's like, move on with your lives. The whole scamdemic is dead in the water. The truth is coming out finally, officially, about the damage these things are causing and about their lack of efficiency. Their efficacy is so bad, they're pretty much useless. They serve no purpose whatsoever, but yet they're hanging on to this business of get your first two and you can come back again, forget your boosters. I don't know if you know about this story or not, but it reminds me of there was an old man, an old Japanese soldier on some remote Japanese island, and somebody landed on it and he was still wearing his uniform from World War II. This was about 20 or 30 years after the war had ended, and he still thought the war was going on, and he wouldn't stop keeping lookout for American invaders until his chief of staff told him otherwise. Literally, he was stuck on a desert island, still thought he was in World War II 20 years after it ended, still performing his duties. It's almost like that with these insistences that people still take these shots or these boosters. Life has moved on. Come on. The COVID narrative is dead in the water. There is no threat whatsoever from any so-called COVID-19 virus or anything of the sort, but yet they still hang on to it. That must be frustrating as well, because you can just see the lunacy of all this, but they're like a dog with a bone. They're still hanging on to this or not. Do you think they'll ever let go of this? Do you think they'll ever just say, you know what, forget it, forget vaccines, we're going to bin them all? Or do you think they'll always have a little residual thread of vaccines running through their policies? What do you think?
Well, I think it goes to show some of the malicious intent of some of these heads of institutions and organisations and even corporations that are still trying to press on with these mandates. You know, you can't argue that you're ignorant anymore. You're obviously part of the cabal. You know, you're part of the narrative, to push this particular agenda. You know, I mean, a major Coles announced last week after Perrottet's comments that it wasn't going to continue the mandate with its staff, which is obviously, you know, a welcome relief. So there's absolutely no excuse now for any CEO or person in authority to continue with this requirement to you know, not allow people to go back to work unless they've had the two shots. To me, it just shows that these people are, certainly have nefarious intentions. They're certainly they're concerned, I believe, too, Rick, with the repercussions and consequences for themselves going down that path, because they know it's probably going to open the floodgates sooner or later to litigation, and that they've made the wrong decision. And some people, unfortunately, rather than falling on their sword and saying that I've made a mistake, these people are prepared to dig their heels in and you know, not do the right thing at any cost.
Yeah, it's also interesting here. We were talking before you came on. I was doing a little Aussie focus in the previous hour of the show. I was talking a lot about policies the government had brought in, like in Melbourne or in Victoria, the homelessness to housing project. It's being canned or at least spurred back because of a lack of funding. Albo's approval ratings apparently are dropping by the day. People aren't particularly happy with the way he's running things. I'm looking at something he's posted up there to say, in just 3 weeks' time, we can come together to choose a better future for New South Wales. The choice is clear: a leader with vision, compassion, and empathy, a leader guided by fairness, equality, and integrity. That leader is Chris Minns, MP, hashtag a fresh start. What's he on about a fresh start? How can there be a fresh start as long as he's in power?
Yeah, well, obviously he's doing his best to try and get him elected over Perrottet. It's sort of, you know, the choice between the devil you know and the devil you don't, really, to be honest. I think that they're both a disaster for New South Wales, but I don't think under Labor, particularly with all this COVID madness, that things would get any better, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think Perrottet, you think he's on his way out then?
Look, it's hard to say. I think they do believe it's closer than what probably most people are anticipating, although a lot of people say that, you know, that Labor will probably get across the line. But, look, I think it might come down to a few independents, to be honest. I think it's I don't think Minns is as popular as some would make out. I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's not about, you know, Labor winning, it's the Liberals losing because they've been in for too long. But I believe that Perrottet, you know, I think there's probably a side of him that realizes, particularly with the vaccines, that you know, that the whole thing is a scam. But unfortunately, he's captured by, you know, the left wing of his party, and he's powerless apparently to do anything to sort of enforce his you know, his direction on the party and these bureaucrats. And it's a concern, isn't it, that you know, that we live in a society now where the bureaucrats just ignore what the Premier has to say, and you know, they're carrying on regardless with this this COVID mandate policy, regardless of what the science says and what the Premier said. So we're certainly living in interesting times.
I'm having a chuckle at this. You know, my motto is if you don't laugh, you cry. Well, you know, just listening to what you're saying there, they just will not let it drop. It's the same in America. You know, they're still insisting that if I was to travel, for example, to America right now until May, I think that's another 2 months from now, I still couldn't enter the country via the airport because I haven't had an injection. But if I cross the border illegally from Mexico, there's no problem with that. I can enter the country illegally with no evidence of vaccination if I'm coming from Mexico way. But if I'm flying into JFK in New York from Dublin Airport, they won't let me off the plane because I haven't had my two shots of the injection. And you were talking there just briefly about the elections that are coming up in 3 weeks for New South Wales. You know, let's face it, a lot of eyebrows have been raised over the last 12 months. The last major elections in Australia back in May last year, I think it was. That's nearly a year ago. I can't believe it. You know, they were very interesting, the results that came out. And then, of course, in November in Victoria, Andrews, the arch enemy of all the Victorian people, he got re-elected, and apparently they've even erected a statue of him, a bronze statue of Dan Andrews in Victoria. Can you believe that? Do you think they'll be erecting any statues to Stephen Kelly in New South Wales anytime soon? I mean, like, you're a decent bloke. You're certainly a better bloke than Dan Andrews. He's got a statue. Do you think you'll be getting a statue anytime soon?
I didn't know there was a statue built for Dan Andrews.
There is. There is.
Well, we're really becoming like a communist country, aren't we, really? You know, Dictator Dan, you know? So, crikey. There'll be one for Albo soon.
There will. But listen, that I'm just saying that just to keep things a little bit humorous here. But it's true. They actually did erect the statue to Dan Andrews in Victoria because they think he's such a great person. Or maybe he thinks he's such a great person and he had the damn thing commissioned at the expense of the Australian taxpayer, no doubt. So we're going to take another quick ad break here, Stephen. And when we come back, let's look at a few other domestic issues affecting you and many other people in the land down under here on TNT Radio. Don't go away.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
America is rudderless, at risk of being swept away by a globalist tide of woke corporatism. Everyone knows that Joe Biden isn't running the country, and he most certainly isn't leading it. Indeed, the menagerie of freaks, geeks, and misfits that he's assembled in Washington, D.C. are driving the country farther away from the shores of sanity than it ever has been before. Fortunately, we are not bereft of leaders, or should I say leader, because only one man is standing head and shoulders above every politician, poser, and psychopathic panty waste. That man, of course, is Donald John Trump, 45th and soon to be 47th president of the United States. In a raucous two-hour speech that brought down the House at CPAC on Saturday, Trump laid out a clear vision not only for the Republican Party, but for America and the world. After another 2 years of Democrats showing people exactly who and what they are, there's no amount of cheating that's going to keep President Trump from taking the helm and bringing us back into harbor. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Researcher William Doyle of the Caesar Rodney Election Research Institute, CRERI, found grants from Zuckerberg's favored nonprofit, the Center for Technology and Civic Life, CTCL, and the Center for Election Innovation and Research, CEIR, rivaled federal and state COVID-related election expenses, with CTCL and CEIR together accounting for an 85% increase in total additional election funding. And that largess was concentrated in a relatively small number of heavily Democratic municipalities. Both organizations were founded by left-wing activists with ties to top progressive advocacy groups. Although CTCL and CEIR are chartered as non-partisan 501c3 corporations, CRERI research suggests the $419.5 million of CTCL and CEIR spending that took place in 2020 was highly partisan in its distribution and its effects.
not the station for people who label truth as misinformation
just because they don't like it.
For facts and truth.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, Stephen, a few things I was going to ask you, but I've just cast my eye over the old live chat, and one of our regulars in there, Jethro, has asked the question, and I am going to ask you the same question, okay? Because I try and encourage people to leave questions for guests in the live chat, and if they're there and I see them and they're not nasty, I will ask them. So here's a hypothetical question for you, and I'm just reading it as it's written here. So Jethro says, I wonder if this bloke, which is you, Stephen Kelly, was still a policeman without getting the jabs, do you think he would have had no problem shooting protesters with beanbag guns for breaking the social distancing rules? Would he have objected to arresting folks or happy to do police enforcement? What do you folks reckon? So he's asked that in the live chat. So I'm asking you because you're my mate, and it's a straightforward question and people are interested. What would you have done? Would you have objected to it? Let me say this. I think you would, because you were prepared to lose your bloody job and your income not to take the mandate. So you're a man of principles, obviously. But the question is, if Rick Munn had been out and not social distancing and you'd have seen him walking down the street, would you have popped the cap in my ass, or what would you have done?
Yeah, look, I think, Rick, the problem is I don't think they would have let me out on the street anyway, because I probably wouldn't have complied with wearing a face mask. So it would have been a bit difficult enforcing that against people for not wearing them if I wasn't wearing one myself. So, and to be honest, to answer the question, no, I wouldn't be. I wouldn't have been enforcing any of these health regulations on anybody.
Yeah, I actually believe you, okay, and I'm not just saying that because you're on the show and I don't want to offend you. I genuinely believe that you would not have played along with it. And just for information purposes, you weren't on the beat. You were working in the autopsy, post-mortem forensic side of things, had done for a long time at the end of your career. But had you been out on the streets, as you said yourself, you wouldn't even wear a face mask, so you would have had difficulty enforcing that with other people. I believe you, okay? Not that it matters if I believe you or not, but I don't think you would have complied with it either. So Jethro, I hope that answers your question. And that's the answer, straight from the old horse's mouth, as it were. No, he would not have complied, and he would not have shot us with beanbag guns, and he would not have arrested us, because he didn't follow the policies himself. He didn't wear masks himself, and he refused to get jabbed himself, and he didn't lose his job. He quit his job because of it. So, you know, you weren't sitting on a big fat pension. You could have been hanging around for two more months and got a nice big voluntary redundancy package. Your whole life had to change as a result of this. That's a difficult decision to make if you're in the thick of it, rather than sitting maybe retired or sitting with a lot of money behind you. Then you can afford to take principled stance. But this guy, to be fair to him, to be fair to Stephen Kelly, and I've said this all along, he's one of the best. And, if you need a little bit of faith restored in law enforcement, Stephen Kelly would be a good starting point. He's a good stick, as it were, and I would be happy to spend time in his company. Should I ever?
The only thing I was just going to add to it, the one thing that probably I wish had I been on the street would have been, to be actually in a position to maybe educate some of the police too, that sort of, overreacted to some of the. I think the problem with a lot of the junior police at the time was that they were poorly led. And I think it's a shame that they didn't have some supervisors and experienced police that basically applied a common sense approach to the way that these regulations were being enforced. And I think that's why we saw so many situations where police were tackling and arresting, mums and dads, and throwing them in the back of the trucks. That's just one thing I if I had the opportunity to sort of educate some of our colleagues at the time, to sort of de-escalate situations, that would have been, one advantage of remaining in the job. you know, the problem is that it's always hard to put an old head on young shoulders. And the problem with a lot of situations that end up in the court system where people are charged with assault and resist police is because, you know, when you get young junior police turning up to a heated situation, sometimes rather than de-escalating the situation, they escalate it. And that's the unfortunate situation of life, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, strangely enough, as you've been speaking there, you've answered another question that somebody else has asked in the live chat. Spartacus Antonio said, did or have you tried to inform your colleagues? At the time, unless I'm mistaken, I remember you saying you were in a very, very small minority of police officers who were not prepared to accept the vaccine at the time. And there was a small group of you who all lost your jobs at the same time, but you certainly were making your reasons for not taking it clear at the time. And I know you've spoke at many, many subsequent rallies, those big rallies that were held last year at Canberra, where you were very outspoken on public stages against the vaccines and against the vaccine mandate. So I think at the time you took a stand, you made it clear why you weren't taking this to your work colleagues and to your superiors. And subsequently, since you left the New South Wales Police, you've been speaking many, many times, at least here, even on TNT Radio. You must have been on here a dozen times at least over the course of the last year, and at public rallies, and through the work that you're doing at AFL Solicitors as an advocate for those people that have been screwed over by mandates and by taking the vaccine. So I think that answers that question as well. Did or have you tried to inform your colleagues? I think the answer is yes to both of those, or am I misreading this?
Well, in my office at the time, I mean, you know, I worked in an office where there was probably, you know, 10 of us. And I did express my views about the whole situation at the time. But, you know, the problem was that most of them, you know, believed the narrative and, you know, they thought I was a conspiracy theorist. You know, this is back in early 2020 and going on to 2021. So it got to the point where, you know, really, you know, I was wasting my time, you know, trying to say anything further. But I didn't get the opportunity to really mix with the, you know, the mainstream police out there operationally, you know. So I wasn't sort of able to you know, educate them before I went off myself.
But since you've went away, that's what I'm saying, you've done a lot of your Rumble videos, you've been at public rallies where you've been a very vocal, outspoken vocal critic of the mandates and also the jabs themselves. You've been coming on here for at least a year now, since literally you were the very first person I ever spoke to on TNT Radio. You were my very, very first guest, and we've been talking about this on and off for the best part of 12 months. So undoubtedly, your colleagues certainly are aware of who you are and what you've been doing since you left the New South Wales Police. And no doubt you'll have got the truth into some of their heads, whether it be directly speaking face to face or whether it be indirectly through the stuff that you're doing on social media or the advocacy that you're doing through AFL. And by the way, just a little plug before I go, if I could just give AFL a little bit of a plug. There's a solicitor's practice in Sydney, AFL Solicitors. You can contact them on aflsolicitors.com.au. Stephen works there alongside Tony Nicklick, who's a great chap. I've spoke to him a few times here on Locked and Loaded as well. They're now working together in that solicitor's practice in Sydney. So if you're an Aussie and you have been negatively impacted by the mandates, or you've been injured, or you have a case to take in and around this type of business, certainly consider linking up with them at aflsolicitors.com.au. And lastly, this will maybe put a smile on your face, a little wry one to finish off with here today. Albo has put a tweet up. He's talking about Pride, Sydney Pride, and he's saying, listen to this, no matter who you are, who you love, or where you live, you should be valued, you should be equal, and you should be celebrated. Stephen, maybe you need to come out of the closet as a gay man so Albo can love you, value you, and treat you as an equal, because as a policeman, He just simply didn't cut the mustard, all right? So I think therein lies the problem. Maybe he's going to try and get you to convert. I don't know. But will you do that just to make yourself loved by Albo? Or are you going to stick with your principles and your sexuality?
I think that Albo's a bit of an opportunist, as we know. And he's someone that I don't take too seriously. So I'm certainly not going to be swayed by what anything Albo says. I'd be surprised if Albo's still around at the end of the year.
Yeah, it seems to be the way, Stephen. Like at the end of the day, it doesn't take long for the shine to wear off somebody. It's a new PM. He's coming in after ScoMo, after so many years, promising heaven, but ultimately potentially delivering hell. But I just thought I would include that because he's talking about inclusion, about loving everyone being treated equally and everyone being treated fairly, except of course the people that refused to take the old jibby jabby injections, of which you are one of them. Stephen, the music's playing, we're up to time. It's always an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for being open and honest, and thank you for answering the questions that our chaps and chapettes in the live chat had there. And I hope you have a lovely evening heading to wherever it is you're going. You and I will stay in contact. That's Stephen Kelly. I'm Rick Munn. This was Locked and Loaded, TNT Radio. Stay tuned for more magic incoming. I'll be back again tomorrow, same bad time, same bad channel. Have a lovely time.